But Ne'ila certainly. I'm not sure you need the Mishnah Berurah to remind us, but he does remind us. Tachlis says Me'etshuva. Mishnah Berurah Siman Tafresh Chav Gimel. Tachlis says Me'etshuva Yom Kippur. Tachlis Yom Kippur is Ne'ila. This is when it had to end. We intuit it. Mishnah Berurah puts it into words. The end of the whole, the 40 days, of the 10 days, of the day of Yom Kippur, that's what the climax is most critical. And once you recognize that reality, as the Mishnah Berurah points out, then it heightens the question one might have about the Takana, the Rabbanan that appears in Maseches Megillah. We were talking just the other week about Kriyas HaTorah and the fact that what there is a Takana Drabbanan, a pretty, a very, very ancient Takana Drabbanan, to make our way through Chumash, chunk by chunk over the course of consecutive Shabbosos. Machlokas HaTanoim, whether we continue to progress during the week also. There were Tanam who held that you lay in Shabbos Mincha, and then Monday you pick up where you left off Shabbos Mincha, and Thursday you pick up left off Monday, and then Shabbos morning you pick up where you left off Thursday. The word Tanan who says that. You're always moving forward. We don't pass in that way, as you know. We pass in that the Takana is every Shabbos. Over consecutive Shabbos mornings, we make our way step by step through Chumash. As I'm sure you know, the Rambam points out based on the Gemara that there were different ancient practices, probably the difference between Minhagei Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, how much laning you do per week. Like whether you're laying the way we lane, which is Minhag Bavel, on an annual cycle, or whether you're laying on a triennial cycle of once every 3 years. Koren, the publishers of the Koren Tanakh, believe that they figured out what the Sedras used to look like, and those are the numbered Sedarim. Looking to open a Koren Tanakh, they have those numbers. On the inside, it was supposed to be less obvious, is the non-Jewish breakdown into chapters. On the outside margins, they have what's the authentic Jewish breakdown, aside from the Parshios, paragraphs, Nukhastuma, the larger breakdowns also that appear in some of the older Tanakhs. They're roughly three of them per Sedra. They make a cheshbon, they do the math, an introduction to the original or older editions of the Koran Tanakh. It works out more or less, if you take a look at the number of weeks in 3 years and you subtract out all the Yom Tovim, they think it works out that those, it's around 40 psukim or so, 40, 50 psukim per Seder, and those Sedarim were the chunks of Kriyas HaTorah in the Eretz Yisrael 3 year cycle. As Nitzavim, Vayelech, Ha'azinu were a typical size, more or less, for a weekly lane. It could be, some suggest that the shorter laning and the slower pace corresponded to the practice of Targum. It's a very, very ancient minhag that appears in Mishnayos and Megillah. Most Gaonim Rishonim assume it's a minhag and not a din, which is why we had the right to stop. To stop doing that, it persisted longer in some communities than in others. But that might be why, it could be they persisted longer in Eretz Yisrael, and that might be why they remained on a 3 year cycle, because Targum takes a lot longer. And laning with Targum takes more than twice as long. I mean, obviously, you're already doubling just the number of words that you say, because you say the pasuk in the Targum, and just the time that it takes to go back and forth, it close to triples the amount, more than doubles the amount of time. That's what some suggest. Nowadays, the Taimani communities are matargain and lane what we would call the full lanings. It takes taka a long chunk of time. Be that as it may, we'll stop the questions a moment, but be that as it may, what one item that jumps out at you from the fact that different minhagim in terms of what used to be, the Rambam writes, even the Rambam's time, right, 8-9 centuries ago, he writes it was already it was more or less universally accepted to lane on the annual cycle that we have, but there had been, Gemara talks about Eretz Yisrael is different Eretz Yisrael than lane on a 3 year cycle. And the fact that there had been these two different minhagim points to the fact that the Takana Drabbanan, the Din Drabbanan, does require laning every Shabbos, and specifically making your way through Chumash over the course of consecutive Shabbosos, but the Din Drabbanan does not mandate which part of Chumash you lane when. depends. Ancient minhagim about that, but the din doesn't require you learning a particular seder on a particular week. There are chunks that have to be learned in addition, like the arba parshios, Eshkol, Mizachar, Parah, and Achodesh. Those are takanos to Rabbanan. And there's certain, as well as other lamings that appear at the end of Maseches and Megillah that we have in our cycle built into the laming. And but let's say to lay the Tochacha before Shavuos and before Rosh Hashanah, if you're on a triennial cycle, that was also probably like a maftir. The same way we lay the Arba Parshas, a separate maftir, because you're not necessarily up to Kisavo and Nitzav Vayelech before Rosh Hashanah. You're not necessarily up to Bechukosai before Shavuos. So they would, it was probably like a separate maftir. But either way, what you lay on a given Shabbos is not a form of takana drabban. You just have to lay, but the drabban just requires that you lay whatever you're up to from last week. However, when is there a takana that you must lay a particular midrabbanan, a real din drabban, you're mechuyav to lay particular things on particular days, not on Shabbos, but you saw on Yom Tov. Right? That's already the Mishnah in Megillah, and the Gemara expands, and the Gemara has machlokas about it. The Mishnah presents one view, the Gemara presents other views in terms of what you lay in particular Yom Tov. And so you saw, this is Mamish Adin Drabbanan. Yom HaKippurim here, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Yom HaKippurim Korin Achemos, Umafkir and Korimar Ram Venisa. Right, that Haftar from Yishayahu, which is exactly what we do. Uve mincha korin barayos umaftirin biyona. Which is exactly what we do. Lin rayos to mincha, three aliyas, and maftir yona. So it's not just an old minute to read yona. This is mamish or dindrabban. Right? What you lay on Shabbos is not dindrabban. Certainly what the haftar is certainly not dindrabban. But yom tov it is. The mamish of form of takana drabban, you mechuyav that yona should be. Let's put the two pieces together. The last public reading of Tanakh before the climax is Yonah. That's a Din Drabbanan. So in context of that comment of the Mishnah Berurah, so this Gemara jumps out at you. There's Maro Chazal. Of all the... there's so much to choose from. You have all the Nevi'im to choose from. Even just looking at Nevi'im Acharonim. Right. There's so much so many inspiring nevuas throughout Yishayahu and Yirmiyah and Yechezkel, so much of all the options. Of all the options, Yonah. That's striking. That's very striking. Right. What did Chazal see? Let's reach back pretty far. Probably 2,000 years. Close to it, maybe even more. When of all the options that they had, they chose Yonah to be the final reading of Tanakh to prepare the last public Tanakh preparation for Chasim and Sadin. So this must be a very loaded haftarah. This must be a very loaded passage of Tanakh. It behooves us to dig deep. And you saw the Beis Yosef says, Maftir b'Yonah, when the Torah quotes these dinim from the Gemara. See, he says, are a couple of approaches in Rishonim as to what drove Chazal to choose Yonah. The most standard approach, the most mainstream approach is that of Beis Yosef. What does he say? What does Beis Yosef say, Rabbi Osai? The power of Tshuva. What question ought you to ask? If you have your thinking cap on and you're thinking analytically as a London, what do you say, Yossi? That's a marvelous question. Go to Koach HaTshuva. Number one, that's very nice. Tshuva is discussed in Yonah, discussed elsewhere also. Very good. And there's a corollary question or two to that. What do you say, David?
In Yonah, it's not Jews
or Jews. Right. it's not, you're pointing out the tshuva is not Jewish tshuva. Are you sure about that? Who does tshuva in Yonah? Give me one. Nineveh, good. Who else?
Yonah.
The sailors. And there are three different tshuvos going on. Each one has its own flavor. Which parak do you find the tshuva of the sailors? Parak Aleph. Which parak do you find the tshuva of the Anshei Nineveh? Gimel. In which parak do you find the tshuva of Yonah?
Well, that's a good question.
It is a good question.
Oh, yeah. It could also be Zerbe. Gimel.
The sailors. Let's back up for a moment, just a sidebar. This is to talk about what happens in which parak. You have it in front of you. What's the most simple breakdown for the prakim? Again, the prakim are not Jewish. The prakim are not really a Jewish. The chapters are Christian. And the only parsha break is two in a row, I believe, at the end of parak beis. But just by way of talking, just to organize our ideas, what would you say?
So the first one is Yonah has run away.
Yonah on the boat. Good. The second one is, where is Yonah in the second one?
Fish.
The fish. Where's Yonah in the third one?
Nineveh.
Where's Yonah in the fourth one? Right, overlooking Nineveh. That's sort of the simplest way to think about the flow of Yonah. It's four different places. I mean, he starts in Eretz Yisrael, but it's Eretz Yisrael, the running away, the escape, Yonah in the boat, more or less. And then you have Yonah in the water, then you have Yonah in Nineveh, then you have Yonah overlooking Nineveh. So the sailor's tshuva is neatly packed into the first parak. The Nineveh's tshuva is neatly packed into the third parak. Yonah's tshuva is not neat at all. As a matter of fact, it's not neatly packed anywhere. It's not really very neat. It's actually very messy. Right. Where is the tshuva happening? In the fourth parak, in the third parak, in the second parak. Right? It doesn't seem like there's any tshuva going on in the first parak. But once he's in the dag already, he's talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a way that sounds like he's really being mekabel what Ribono Shel Olam wants. Such that, beginning of the third parak, Hashem says, go Nineveh, he's there. Then he has the whole conversation in the fourth part to figure out how that, hopefully we'll have a chance to see that actually is a very important part of his tshuva. But now we come back again. Going back, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. Going back to the Beis Yosef. And again, putting the pieces together. Mishnah Berurah tells us, ooh, Ne'ilah! Wow. In which case, you look at Megillah, you say, Megillah Amud Aleph. That's a very significant takana. Gemara just sort of, right, it's two words in the Gemara, Maftir and Bayona, but in those two words of the Gemara, there are layers and layers of meaning that are packed in. What is it about? What are Chazal telling us about Yonah? So the Beis Yosef says it's tshuva, and not just tshuva, but godel koach ha-tshuva. The magnitude, the greatness, or the significance of the power of tshuva. Now what does that mean? So, and as you pointed out, why is Yonah uniquely the best way to demonstrate that? Yeah, you want to respond?
Yes, is it because once Bnei Yisrael came out of Egypt, before that, Abraham converted people in Haran, and there was also Elimelech, the Kohen, went up to meet Abraham, beat the four kings, so that you could serve Hashem, whether or not you were Jewish. But after that, besides Eved, Kanaani, etc., the other nations didn't really serve Hashem.
Oh.
But now this is an example of them serving Hashem.
Oh. So Avrami says maybe it's in terms of the scope, of the breadth, the range of tshuva. Here's that tshuva applies both to Jews and to non-Jews. As a matter of fact, the Arishon who suggests that the message of Yonah is less about tshuva and more about Beracham Aval Kol Maasav. And to realize how broad is the Rachmei Shemayim. And we shouldn't think it's only narrowly confined to only Kal Yisrael, it's only Tzadikim. No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is investing on Anshei Nineveh, Rachmei Shemayim Kamas. And you say, even from the tshuva perspective, maybe it's tshuva could apply to any. No one should say, I'm too far away. I can't do tshuva. Good, what else? Huh? Okay, good. That shows that even a tshuva meira is also meaningful. Fantastic. What else?
It used to show
Ah, okay. Well, maybe folks, as you're focusing on Tshuva's Anshei Nineveh, or the Tshuva of the sailors, and you're also focusing on the Tshuva of Anshei Nineveh and the sailors, and you're saying maybe in terms of the Tshuva of Yonah, you see he goes from Bebira Amikta L'Igur Rama. And from such a low place, he's able to go to such a high place. And there may be more. Maybe if we dive into, no pun intended, if we dive into Yonah, and we'll look at the different Tshuvos, and we may see there's a lot going on in various, there's something to be learned from the Tshuva of the sailors, there's something special to be learned from the Tshuva of the people of Nineveh, and there's something very dramatic Chiddush, to be derived from the Tshuva of Yonah. There were other questions before we jump into the Pesukim. Other hands before? I asked you guys to wait, no? Okay. Let's take a look. So what bothers you about Perek Aleph? Got a marker that works. How about that? Ah, Simanotam. First one, yeah. Can I do a question? Was there anything that bothers you about the first parak? Yelson?
Well, I think the most obvious one is
going to be. Good. Why is Yonah right away? What's the motivation? Good. What else?
I'm sorry? The way he describes getting off the boat, he mentions some pain, he mentions that he's going to hit them. Tarshish.
I'm sorry?
Not the Gimel.
Yeah.
There are
a few extra details.
One
of the basic Sahara. Okay, good. What's with that? We're not concerned that he was freeloading or stowaway. Said, of course, he paid. He also probably ate breakfast that morning. Or maybe not. Maybe it would be Masana. Right. Why is that an important detail? That's a good point. Yeah, what else?
I don't know if it's the same question as the first one. I don't know. But, why did you want to actually run away from
Hashem? Oh, good. I think that's not the same question. What's his goal in running away from Hashem? Why is he not? He's a Navi. Right? And another question is, Hayim Chashav Sheyatzliach. Do you really think he was going to succeed? He's a Navi. He knew his Bereishis. And it didn't work for Adam. He really thought he was going to see. We don't know why he wanted to run away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and why do you think that would be, even if he had a motivation, why do you think that would be successful? Yaakov.
Why did he, Hashem Beirat Nuah just says that he has to be Tshuva, but Yonah, when he talks to them, when Hashem talks to them about it, he always says that Hashem's going to kill you in 40 days, even though Hashem never said, give time, that always said he's going to kill you. So if that's true, if he said he would be a why at the beginning,
okay.
It's not true, why did he say it?
Okay. So I guess that's more paragimbal question.
Oh,
let's put it up here. I guess paragalf also. Right,
I thought of it.
Okay. You're saying paragalf pasuk beis, crawl aleha, speak to Nineveh, ki also raw some lefonai. Right, there it says, because they were sharp. Now in paragimbal pasuk beis, kum leichel Nineveh hira gedola, ukura eleha, es ha kriya asher nachid over eleha. Second time around, sounds like Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to give you direct dictation. So l'chora, sounds like he was saying exactly, it doesn't say in the Pesukim the first time that Hashem told him this language, but it sounds like the language that Yonah speaks is the language that was dictated. There is an interesting movement from Tshuva to Onesh. Originally, it's also Rasul Lepanai, and the second time around, it's just, Ora Baram Yon V'Nivnev Nefachas. Good point. Now, it could be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was explained to Yonah, the background, in Perek Aleph. That wasn't necessarily supposed to be the message. Or, at first, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving him the freedom to figure out how he wanted to formulate it, and he didn't take HaKadosh Baruch Hu up on that option. That's a good point. Yeah, Ziv.
It's maybe a little bit uncomfortable, but a small point. Why does Yonah point out that being thrown into the ocean is over,
then
he has to be there
like an ancient prophet? Ooh, very interesting. Hatiluni, he didn't do it himself. He didn't jump. that he was gonna, he was construct Amir al-Aqab. I guess that could be, is that the first case, is that the only case Amir al-Aqab in Tanakh? In a narrative in Tanakh? He wasn't gonna jump himself, he told them, you should throw me in. I don't think that was that.
I need to be put into the ocean.
Right. Right, he did that for him.
The lights in my room are off today. Yes. Good day for his
I think it would be a nice day to go swimming. No, no, he actually tells them directly. I don't mean from a halachic standpoint, but or maybe, but it is striking. Please. So we were talking about, let's bring it back in after that important pause. So again, a whole slew of questions. Why is Yonah running away? Does Yonah think he's going to succeed? Why is the Torah telling us that he paid? And then go move into the end of the parak. So uni v'ati luni. He wants to get it done, but he doesn't want to do it himself. Yeah, what else? No? No?
I thought the event, there are like five questions to ask, and then one of them is answered. And then in Yud, it says that one is you can also answer, but it's not stated in the continuation of the parak. Why does
the
Mishnah say that in Pasuk
Chet? Right, in Pasuk Chet, a whole slew of questions. Ma malachtecha ya'in tava ma'artzecha emizeh amata, they want to know his background. What do you do for a living? Where are you from? What's your land? What's your nationality? A lot of overlap there. It sounds like they're asking for his background or for his resume, and the beginning of the pasuk may also be a question. Hagida no lanu v'asher l'miha ra zos lanu. That's either a separate question also. Why has this happened? Or that's the... You are the one who... That's a statement. You are, being that you're the one who appears to be the cause of all this, explain. Right? So what's with all their questions? And his response is... Right? I'm a proud Jew. Ivri Anochi. It's Hashem Lokei Hashem and Niyareh. Asher also says Hayam Asiyah Bashar. I believe in God, the God of the heavens, who also created both the land and the sea. Vayah Bashar, Ba'avir, Uvayam. He mentions here in this passage all three. So what's going on with the She'elos Uchuva? And then as you pointed out in Pasuk Yud, it becomes clear from there, the Shach HaPatara continues. They know, he apparently had explained to them, although wasn't Pasuk Tes, not just that he's a proud Jew and he believes he's a monotheist, who believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the entire universe, but that he had also explained to them afterwards, I believe in God, but I'm running away from him. And that's why we're storm-tossed, which again also is a little funny. Like, I'm a proud Jew, I believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm running away from him. Which is sort of heightens the questions from before. Yeah, what else? David? Okay, good. Like, what's with the description of the storm? Hashem Heitil. Heitil, by the way, is Bechal a fascinating word? For the grammatically sensitive or the lexicographically sensitive, because the shorish is, it's not notal, it's not hitil, it's hatil. That shorish is either tes vav lamer or tes yud lamer. It sounds like it's a precursor to the tes lamed that you have in the Mishnei, letal tiltal. So this is sounds like an earlier form, the biblical Hebrew form of what ultimately becomes tiltal. The Kadosh Baruch Hu is being mate, not matil, but matil, a ruach. Yeah, and then what's with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, the ruach and the sar. Those two steps. Yosef. Yeah.
The ship. So it's confusing the way that it worked out. They seem to know more than he did.
Yeah. They had to ask him, but he's being very reactive. As a matter of fact, when all the rest of them are diving to their getchkas at Lo Yo'ilu, he knows that he believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who actually exists and is powerful, and meanwhile he's diving down to the bottom hull of the ship to go to sleep while they're all on the deck pounding away. Yeah, Brian, you had your hand up? Pasuk Gimel. Yud Gimel. They're trying to get away, and they can't. And the sea isn't letting them. So what's your question?
What were they trying to do? If they really thought that everyone might know this, and then Yonah already told them that that the sea and the land was making a difference. So were they trying to do something? Were they just like trying to do whatever?
Try to save him?
So what was their goal?
So why is it relevant for us to know that they were frantically trying to get back to like the land?
Wow, why is that important?
And now also.
Right. And is there a flow? There probably is a flow into the next pasuk. Because if it doesn't work, they call out to Ribbono Shel'Olam and they say, we don't want to kill anyone. Right? Al Nanovza B'Nefesh Yishazeh. On the one hand, we don't want to die. We don't want to die because of this fellow Yonah. On the other hand, Al Titin Aleinu Dam Naki. We also don't want to be murderers. Because he's telling us, toss me overboard and you'll be fine. And they say to Kadosh Baruch Hu, we're caught between a rock and a hard place. Because we don't want to murder him, but we also don't want to die ourselves. Which presumably is why they were trying to avoid the problem, but let's get to the Yabasha. And then whatever Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to do to you will happen, but at least we're not going to be, you know, we won't be the ones who killed you. And it doesn't work. And ultimately, in the next pasuk, they do toss him over. They realize that that's what apparently Rav Moshe wants to do. Of them. Yeah, why is that significant? Why is that whole piece significant? What else? More questions, yeah?
What's the tshuva that they do? Because Yonah, you know, the tshuva is only based on Yonah being there for Lady Bell, and then they do tshuva. Why would that happen? What are they doing tshuva from to
thinking other gods?
They do tshuva because they have to go to God.
The tshuva of the sailors, yeah? Ziv.
Why do they become so dumb?
Okay, good.
I don't get it. Can you just answer that by saying that Yonah...
What's going on in the tshuva of the sailors?
Can you just say that Yonah said that my God's Hashem, and this is the reason, and once he gets thrown off and everything calms down, they see that all their prior beliefs aren't good, and they become frum because they see that literally God Hashem right in front of them.
Good.
I don't get why that's so different.
Okay, good. Let's come back to that in context. More questions? Wow, more questions. Yeah.
This might be a more technical question, but how do you bring this back? How do you bring a korban on a boat?
Ah, okay, great. That's a great question.
They were going to bring it in the future.
How do you
Where was this korban happening exactly? And I guess one final question. Ephraim, bring us home.
Sensitive to both
Ninveh
and to the sailors, and those are just Hakadosh Baruch Hu.
I'm sorry?
Yonah seems to be sensitive to, first of all, Hashem, then Ninveh, and then the sailors.
That's a very good point. Not only do we understand why Yonah is running away, but also, V'lo Chashash, V'Ninveh, V'lo Malachim. That's a good point. Not only is he violating Tzivur Hashem, he's also endangering Ninveh, and frankly also endangering sailors. Now, the sailors at least, once they have the conversation, say, he says, by the way, it's all, here's how you get rid of me and you'll be safe. But still, you're right, at the beginning, initially, he just goes down into Yarkas Esvina, right? And certainly, Anshe Ninveh, until round two, he's prepared to head west. Well, one last question, yeah?
I don't think that he's necessarily don't care about Ninveh being destroyed. I think he wants them to be.
Oh, okay, good. Good.
It seems that he wants them to, he thinks that they deserve to die, so he doesn't want to get them to do Jew. I think they deserve to die.
How do you know that? Can you find evidence in the Psukim?
It says it that because he was
says it where?
It says it by the Kitayot.
Very good. Perek Dalet. And he says to Kadosh Baruch Hu, I knew this would happen. This is what I said when I was on my land. Presumably it means in Eretz Yisrael. When you spoke to me the first time, or the second time. The first time. That's why I ran away. I knew that you'll give them another chance, and apparently Yonah felt that was a problem. Yeah, Yonah was trying to avoid Tshuvas on Sheninve that he had been told to enable. Another question.
I have a more general question I thought of yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to. Why did Hashem not do this for Sodom and Gomorrah?
Why Nineveh? Interesting.
Why didn't he send Avram and be like, 40 days, you guys are going to die?
Why Nineveh? That's a great question. Okay. So let's take a look. Let's review. Wow, we have a lot on the board. So what do we have on the board, Rabbi Osai? Lots of great questions. In order of the psukim, more or less, number one, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu extend this opportunity dafka to Nineveh? Why was Nineveh's game? Number two, what's Yonah's motivation to run away? Why is he choosing to avoid the Tzivui Hashem? Number three, even if he has a reason why he wants to avoid Tzivui Hashem, which is really striking, strange, particularly a Navi, Rambam Brown points out, a Navi is a person above all else of unusual spiritual attainments. And not just anyone is a Navi. To be a Navi, you have to be an extraordinary Talmud Chacham, an extraordinary Oved Hashem, and then you grow and you get to the top of the Mesillas Yesharim's ladder, you get to Kedusha and beyond, and maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you the gift of Nevuah. This is a result of years, maybe decades of growth in the Zev and Hashem. This is not someone who is theologically shallow, nor someone who is, lacks conviction in terms of listening to Rebbe Shlomo. So why on earth, question number two, would Yonah want to contravene a Tzivui Hashem? Imagine us. We're not Yonah. Right? So we have, sometimes we do the right thing, sometimes we don't. Imagine a Kodesh Baruch Hu came back. Yonah Hashem said, I want Akiva do this. Can you imagine not listening? And I guess it's possible. Really? And Yonah is Yonah. And Kodesh Baruch Hu told him, here's your job. I want you to go to Nineveh. And what does he do? He did mamash an about face. Almost 180 degrees off. Nineveh is northeast of Yerushalayim, and Tarshish is to the west. And he's supposed to go like that. Instead, he goes to Yafo and gets in a boat and goes west to Tarshish. Wherever Tarshish is, perhaps it's along the Mediterranean shore, perhaps the southern Mediterranean shore, North Africa. Or someone said Tarshish just means into the sea. Whatever it is, mamish, hayitach. Number three, even if for some reason he was motivated to want to avoid Dvar Hashem, did he really think that he could be Barach? He really thought that was going to work? Number four, why are the psukim describing the fact that he paid? He got a boat. He got a boat. He went. Why is it important? I mean, it's important that one should pay. And let me be very clear. It's incredibly important that one be an honest person and not Khalilah steal things or take things without paying for them properly. To be a turnstile jumper is a violation of many, many different deeds in the Torah. Good. But presumably that's not the message of Yonah. Maybe it is. But why all of a sudden here? And then question number five was, why is the psukim on Torah sort of like this two-step description? Because Baruch Hu brings a ruach, and then there's a star. And then the six, we had that discussion about the questions and answer. They have a lot of questions for him. He sort of answers some of them, but clearly he told them more. Also, what's going on with the back and forth? Number seven, the fact that he needed to ask. They need to ask him at all. He was being so reactive as opposed to coming and saying, look, Rabbi Osai, I see you worry about the storm. It's me. Just tip me over. Which brings us to question number eight, which is another aspect of his reactivity, which is that he doesn't let himself off the boat. He doesn't climb down into the sea. Eventually he tells them, right, you can shove me off. He's being very passive. Both number seven and eight. Number nine is the velo yacholu, that after he tells them, throw me overboard, the psukim go out of their way to tell us that they first try to get back to shore, presumably to avoid the dilemma that they articulate in the following pasuk. Right, in pasuk Yud Gimel, they try to get to shore and it doesn't work. The storm prevents them, and the dilemma they explain and they verbalize in pasuk Yud Aleph. We don't want to die, but we also don't want to murder. And then finally, pasuk 10, question 10 is about the tshuva of these sailors. I'm trying to understand what are they doing tshuva about, what's driving it, and this is either 11 or 10b, is the karbanos that they're bringing. Where are these karbanos being brought exactly? Is this a carbon on the deck of the ship? Is this a carbon somewhere else? And then already with Paragimel, we got started with the opening, interesting question. Paragimel is a study in and of itself. I don't think we've got time for that today. About the what exactly is the message to Nineveh? Is it about just the onesh? Is it about you need to do tshuva? So the mechilta, so let's start with at least 10 questions on Paragalf. Let's start with question number 2. And with question number, if we answer question number 2, many, many of the other questions are going to fall into place. There are multiple answers, approaches to question number 2. What's Yonah's motivation? Probably the most famous and the oldest is a mechilta. Mechilta is a medrash halacha on Shemos. Mechilta, several Rishonim quote the mechilta already raises this question: What's Yonah trying to accomplish? What Yonah trying to accomplish, mechilta says, requires a little bit of a broader perspective, a little bit of historical Tanakh. That Tanakh historical consciousness. In the sense that you have to have a little bit of a sense of time and place. Yonah, Chazal says there's a man named Yonah ben Amittai who appears in Malachim, a Talmud of Elisha, and their opinions in Chazal that he is the boy whom Eliyahu was Mechayim Mesim, and say he's living in that time and place. He's living near the end of Malchus Yisrael, through the second half of the period of Bayis Rishon. This is deep into the split between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Right, that already happened. Shlomo's son, Rechavam, was only the king over this Malchus Yehuda, the southern kingdom. And Yeravam ben Navat had been appointed, actually by the Navi, could have been a big tzaddik, could have been the Kirbah who wanted him to be the king over Malchus Yisrael. He went terribly sour. And throughout, as you know, throughout Sefer Malachim, you see that the Malchus Beis David, Malchus Yehuda, sort of comes and goes. Sometimes it's tzaddikim, sometimes it's less than tzaddikim. Malchus Yisrael are just about to a man pretty vital. Ultimately, as you know, Malchus Yisrael goes into Golus long before Malchus Yehuda. Last year we were talking about the Pesukim in Yahu about the Churban Beis HaMikdash and then the subsequent destruction of the final communion of the Gedalia, but well over a century before, the northern kingdom had already been sacked. We were talking last week about the different superpowers in the Middle East. By the end of the Bayis Rishon, the leading superpower is the one that destroys, ultimately sacks Yerushalayim, destroys the Beis HaMikdash, and Malchus Babel. Their competition was to the south, on the other side of Eretz Yisrael, Mitzrayim, and one of their contenders nearby, the Mitzrayim and Babel are Babel is, Mitzrayim obviously is in northeastern Africa, Babel is in Asia, northeast of Eretz Yisrael. There, Babel had been jockeying for power with Ashur, which is right nearby, Iran. And earlier in before the ascendancy of Babel, Ashur had been the leading power. Ashur, under several emperors, and some emperors make visits to Eretz Yisrael, and they start to make trouble, they start to take over. Tiglath-Pileser comes, and this one and that one. Ultimately, they, number one, destroy, I should say, conquer Malchus Yisrael, the northern kingdom. It's the end of Malchus Yisrael. They're taking at the Golus of Aseret HaShvatim, and that's the because the Ashuri emperors practiced mass migration as a solution for how you maintain an empire. It's a vexing political problem. You try to have an empire, how do you maintain control, particularly without modern communication and transportation? How do you maintain control if your empire grows, your leverage seems to diminish? So the Ashuri solution to how you run an empire was to practice mass migration. After you conquer a country, take its inhabitants and move them somewhere else. And that way they don't feel like they're at home. They're not on home turf. They don't have a home court advantage. It'll be easier to subjugate them, to keep them under your thumb. So the Jews of the Aser HaShoalim get moved out, the Kusim get moved in. That's how the Kusim come to be in Eretz Yisrael. And ultimately, Sancheirev is the last emperor Ashur that we hear about, who destroys much of Malchus Yehuda, even lay siege to Yerushalayim. This is already after the fall of Aser HaShoalim and the Malchus Yisrael. They siege Yerushalayim and miraculously is pushed back. So the Navi describes, we talk about Leila Seder, there's external archaeological evidence that was found of Assyrian records that, to the extent that their hubris allowed, they also corroborate the fact that they were pushed back from Yerushalayim. Because in the records, only Jews are so honest as to talk about their failings. So Sancheirib doesn't say that he lost, or that his soldiers were dispersed or destroyed, but he does say he conquered this country, conquered that country, conquered this country. Then he says he came to Yehuda, and he conquered, I forget how many cities, and he conquered Lachish, which was the second largest city in Eretz Yehuda at the time, and I even laid siege to Yerushalayim. End of paragraph. So, Michal, hey, Natosha Me'alav. I mean, he laid siege, but obviously didn't get... I wasn't going to say he lost, but he didn't say he won. So he's supposed to understand, read between the lines. That's what's happening during and after the time of Yonah. Says in the Chilta, Yonah's alive as Ashur is picking up power, as Ashur is rising to become the superpower that it will soon be. The superpower will soon be, and thereby Shevet Apo of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, open the vehicle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's being Magla the Aseres HaShvatim. And the Mechilta describes Yonah as essentially saying, what? I'm going to enable the destruction of Klal Yisrael, of so many of Klal Yisrael. So he takes one. He thought the right thing to do was to take one for the team. That was his kavanah. If it happens, it happens, but I'm not going to be the one to enable Nineveh to survive another day and not get wiped out because of their chataim, so that they can survive long enough to be the ones who will be at the vehicle to cause this incredible gullus and dispersion and destruction of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. And he says, I can't do it.
Akidekach, that throughout the perek, you see how incredibly motivated he is to at all costs escape. Now, for instance, Ve'itain Schara. So some comment, why? Of course he paid.
So some comment, Medrash comments, Ve'itain Schara. Paid for her. For whom? The boat. Like some say, it means the entire, he pays the whole thing, he gets on the boat and he says, you know, as soon as we fill up, we'll go. He's like, we need to go now. Like, well, I'm sorry, but we have another X number of seats. He's like, I'll pay for all the seats, let's just go. Okay, I'll pay for all the seats. He basically chartered the rest of the boat, anything just to get out. At all costs, he's trying, they really, really, really driven
By a kavana tova, so he feels it to be, to save Klal Yisrael, or at least not to be the one that contributes to the destruction of so many Jews. That may also speak to why he's really being very reactive, right?
here and here. He's really trying to just lay low. Now, but the reactivity also brings us back to question number three. Now, this also speaks to question number one. It was specifically Ninveh, as part of the dynamic of the story, is Ninveh has a very important role to play in the Kadosh Baruch Hu's plan for Klal Yisrael going forward. So we understand the significance of Ninveh in particular. Now, in terms of question three, that's also a very, very central question. Not only why he's doing, what's his motivation, but what's his plan? He really thought he went away from Kadosh Baruch Hu? I mean, even if we understand why he wanted to, and we'll come back in the next few minutes to analyze what type of motivation is that. Is that good? Is that bad? To wanna... It was out of a place of Avos Yisrael, but he's ignoring Dvar Hashem. But let's move from motivation to implementation. Because what's the plan? We know the goal. What was the plan? The plan was to run away from Moshe. How are you talking? He knew that wouldn't work. He's Yonah. He's a Navi. He's not an Am Haaretz. He's a Navi. He's an extraordinarily sophisticated as a human can be in terms of appreciating and understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not this Alpe. He certainly knew the first call of Prakha and Bereshis. So we showed him, point us to an extra letter that appears twice in Pasuk Gimel. Perek Aleph Pasuk Gimel. If you want to run away from Hashem, what would be the right preposition? He wants to be boreach, me, it should be mipinei, either me Hashem or mipinei Hashem. But it says he's being boreach twice in one pasuk, it says he's being boreach from me lifnei Hashem. I mean, from etta, two prefixes in a row. Mi lith ne Hashem. What does that mean? He's being bereach, Rishonim suggests, from a position of lith ne Hashem. In Chumash, what does lith ne Hashem mean? Makam Mikdash. Right? Something different. There are different levels of Makam Mikdash, but if samach lith ne Hashem lokecha, lith ne Hashem lokecha, achavta sham, lith ne Hashem lokecha, lith ne Hashem is a code word in Chumash for in Mikdash. He's not running away from God. He knows he can't run away from God. But the goal is, he wants to run away from Nevuah. Kadosh Baruch Hu already told him once. The Malbim suggests, maybe the first time was Mamash Nevuah, but his instructions, and he wants to escape before he gets a formal Nevuah. Usually it's assumed that they acknowledge the Malbim, they got Nevuah. But bad enough, I'm going to have to violate one Nevuah. Doesn't want to get another Nevuah. So he figures, what's the best thing to do? How am I going to avoid Nevuah? A, I'll get out of Eretz Yisrael. Gemara says that Eretz Yisrael is the main makam on Nevuah. A Jew could get Nevuah outside Eretz Yisrael, but Gemara says it's less likely and will only happen if you at least started your prophetic career in Eretz Yisrael. Gemara Darshan, that's the Pasuk in Yechezkel. Hayom Hayad Bar Hashem, the opening Pasuk in Yechezkel, even though the first Nevuah described in Yechezkel is in Babel, on the banks of the Kavar River, there's an oddity in the language, the opening phrase, that indicates this is the first Nevuah described in the Sefer, but it's not the first time Yechezkel got Nevuah. And he must have already gotten Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael because you can't start your Nevuah career in Chutzlaretz. And even if you start, it's less likely to get Nevuah in Chutzlaretz. So he figures, number one, let me get Eretz Yisrael. I'll get to a place of weaker reception. Like when you don't want to get that phone call, because you'd rather not to deal with the phone call. So let me get that. So Yonah apparently is doing that. Let's get to a place of poor reception. A, out of Eretz Yisrael. B, I'll be in a boat where everyone is a little bit nauseous, this and that, distracted. You're not in a place. Nevuah comes when you're in a place mentally, in a place of focus, a meditative clarity. So he put himself into a position where he's less likely to get Nevuah. He doesn't think HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to notice him. No, it's not like, oh, I'm going to run away. Hashem won't know where I am.
No. He understood the opposite.
But he figured he's doing that. He understands. And here he raises it even in the outset. He knows it's not. Is this the right thing? Is this the wrong thing? He realizes this isn't really the right thing. I definitely don't want to violate Tzivui Hashem again. At least let me not get the phone call. Let me not get the message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah.
It seems still selfish to say, well, since I don't want to be the one to do bad things, therefore,
good.
It seems far too much for.
We're not done yet.
Okay. Why do you go to sleep?
Okay, good. That, exactly. He's getting away from it all. Mama's trying to just going to sleep is more likely to get nevuah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Ah, that's interesting. But usually, I think it's the sleep he understood also is trying to escape what's going on. Whatever happens is going to happen. You know, if we die, Malvi even describes, even in halachic terms, he goes into the boat, al pide, and he points out to base and shuvas about agunas. He goes in the boat, in the bottom hole of the boat, he's most likely to drown. He's trying to escape, whatever happens, but he's not going to be an actor. Yeah.
What's the part of the actual letter of it?
Oh, he's escaping, he's moving, not escaping a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but he's escaping a position of Lifnei Hashem. He's getting away from being in a place of greater access from anything Mikdash related, so he's less likely to get Nebuah. He knows that Kodesh Baruch Hu knows where he is, he just doesn't want to get another phone call, so to speak. He doesn't want to get more Nebuah from Kodesh Baruch Hu. Bad enough, he violated one Nebuah, he doesn't have to violate more. Now, maybe I told him to take more questions for a little bit. Let's keep working, and then hopefully some of your questions will either fall into place or be sharpened. So Yonah escapes. Yonah escapes again. Doesn't even think he's going to escape from Baruch Hu, but is driven by this desire not to be the one that's causing harm to Klal Yisrael, and feeling A, that that's a valid reason to ignore Tzivui Hashem, and B, that he would rather cause Nineveh to go under than to be the cause of. He'd rather be passively the cause of Nineveh going under, as opposed to actively a core, indirect cause of Klal Yisrael experiencing Korban. So he says, I'm just going to be passive. I'm going to get away from Nevuah, and whatever happens, I'm not going to be part of it. And what happens? Now, the sailors go into question number six. So the sailors, they're trying to figure out what's going on. They apparently, even as pagans, they understand some notion of Schar V'Onesh, and they realize the very least the Medrash seems to say, and that speaks to what your question about the Ruach and the Sar, that the Medrash describes the reason why they think it must be someone in the boat is because it's such an unusual storm that sea are not so unusual, but this had a very unusual presentation. Some of the Midrashim describe, they're looking around, it seems like the other boats aren't storming. It's like a hyper-local storm, which may have to do with the Ruach and the Sar. Something's up. So they already, even as pagans, have some notion of Schar V'Onesh, that this must have to do with someone on this boat. And not just someone on this boat, but someone on this boat sinned. And because of that, you have a storm. And they also have some primitive, and they seem to have some notion of, maybe even of tshuva. Like, let's figure out, oh, it's you? So they start asking a whole bunch of questions, presumably Malcolm and others say, designed to, let's get to the root of the problem. What have you done? What is it about you that's causing this? So he skips their questionnaire. He says, let's forget about the form. Let me just answer your question. I know what you're really getting at. You want to know what it's all about? I'll tell you what it's all about. I'm a Navi of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. He doesn't say that in that pasuk, but it's clear from pasuk Yud that he had told them not only I believe in a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but that, and that's why I am, that's why this storm is happening, because of me. Now it should be noted that he is responding to their pagan beliefs. It should be noted that his response is, I believe Hashem Elokei HaShamayim, who also made the Yam and the Yabasha. In other words, I don't think there's a God up in heaven who's a good God, and there's a God of chaos who runs the sea, or there's a Satan of chaos who runs the sea, who's, you know, working against the guys. No. I believe in one God who runs everything. I'm a ma'amin. He may have been running away from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. His emunah was very strong. It is absolutely great to give him a shir and hashkafa. There is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the sea also. The chaos in the sea is run by the same Lord as the orderliness of planetary motion. It's one, we believe in Hashem Echad, and everything coming from him, and apparently he also told him, although it doesn't appear in the Pasuk, that and it's not working to get away from HaKadosh Baruch, right? They now, the question of why the Psukim describe their attempt to desperately get to shore, it's good to know they didn't want to kill, but why do we have to hear about all that to get to shore, has a lot to do with the tshuva of the sailors. Because there are those who point out that if you watch the sailors, they grow a lot. In Pasuk Hey, Vayiru'u ha-malachim, Vayizaku esh-eloh, they have a yira, and then they're calling out to their Avodah Zarah. So a very ambiguous, unformed, inchoate yira. And they have a sense of yira, but at this point it's directed towards their pagan idols. But they do already, but already there's something. Pasuk Yud already, but Yiru HaAnashim, Yiru Gedola. It's growing. And Pasuk Tezayin, but Yiru HaAnashim, that's Yiru Gedola Es Hashem. There clearly, the Yiru is growing, ultimately becomes focused. Revolt Shalom already in Pasuk Yudalid, but Yiku'ula, they're Davi Takarish Baruch Hu, and they don't want to kill, but they don't want to die either. And by the Kiyata Hashem, Hashem Chabas says, "Israel, they have grown tremendously in their emunah." And again, in the pasuk, the parak ends, and once they have this yira gedolos Hashem, he's bechuzedach Hashem, yidur nedarim, and they're ready to bring karbanos, and they're making promises. Now, where is karbanos happening? You asked, someone asked before, a carbon on deck. The truth is, some of the rishonim suggest that. The summary shalom, I believe, suggests that they brought karbanos very soon, and then the nedarim were to bring more karbanos in Beis HaMikdash. And I think others suggest that they're going to bring karbanos in Beis HaMikdash. So v'yidru nedarim must be more than just a promise. Usually, often nedarim means a nedarim karbon. Here must be more than just a karbon, because the zevach Hashem is going to be in Beis HaMikdash. V'yidru nedarim may have been an even greater promise, i.e. to become gerim. They've mamish come a long way. From Vayizaku Eshelahav, within over the course of, I don't know, hours, minutes, they're ready to be Megayim. Wow. And the irony is, and I think this we may have spoken about Kavisgo to Mishma, right? The irony is that, and this is where Rabbi Nehra's Ha'ara. The irony is, and Rav Shalom says to Yonah, because the truth is, there's another question. As soon as Yonah is thrown into the water, he's in the dag, and all of a sudden, Parak Beis, he's already diving to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It seems like we're done with escape. Right? He already is diving to Ribon Shalom, Karasi Mitzarali, El Hashem, Pasuk Gimel, and he realizes Ribon Shalom is running this all. Parak Beis, Pasuk, I thought I'm pushed away from you. As you mentioned, he says, I will yet come to Beis HaMikdash. I'll bring a carbon, Pasuk Yud, Bani B'Kol Toda. Ez B'Chalacha, Ez Hashem, Adarti Ashalem, Yishas Hashem. I'm going to sound like I'm going to bring carbonos to Beis HaMikdash. And I've been a previous Pasuk, it sounds like he might be talking about the sailors. Meshamrim Havalei Shav, those who care so much about Narishkeit, the empty nothingness, the Avodah Zarah, Chasam Yazovu. They abandon their belief in the chesed of the Avodah Zarah. Look, they're embracing you also. Something happened. All of a sudden, as I said before, right, the Yonah's tshuva is not in Parak Aleph, but Parak Beis Gimel Dalet. There's a lot of tshuvas Yonah in different stages. Parak Beis already seems to have recognized, understood the needs to change. In Parak Gimel, he actually does change. And that, by the way, Vahidvar Hashem Ayona, Shainus Lamar. Why Shainus? I can't count on my own. Okay, second time. There are different approaches in Rishonim. Well, one is, so some say this was the last time, it's the second and that's it, no more. The others say, I mean, it's meant to set up the contrast. Pasuk Aleph, Akash Baruch spoke to him and he ran away. So day, Akash Baruch said, go east, he went west. But the second time was the opposite. Akash Baruch said, go east, and he went east. That's the Rambam describing Peribez al Ha'alaf. By Hilchos Tshuva, coined from the Tanaim. Tshuva Gemura is when you're in the same situation a second time, and this time you made the right choice. You change enough, you're actually able to implement it. It's mamish what you see here. Akash Baruch speaks to him again, and this time Itaka goes. Right? So Perek Bey's already clearly, he's changing within. His thinking is changing. He realizes he needs to act differently. Perek Gimli Itaka does act differently. And then that sort of hanging Perek Dalid, where he's all upset all over again. So let's try to put some more of the pieces together. So while Yonah is running away, trying to avoid, do whatever he can to sidestep, having to do fulfill the tzivah that he was given, he manages, almost kelachar yad, to succeed in bringing about the tshuva of the sailors. And I think I mentioned the other week, at a mishram, I thought Rav Avinger suggested that the sod ha-hashkacha that's going on here. And Rabbi says, you have your Bechir Chashas. I want you to get Yonah Ninveh to do tshuva. You're trying to avoid that. You don't want to cause the Nachrim to do tshuva. Some Midrashim say, the Jews haven't been listening to the Nevi'im. If I show up and the non-Jews listen to me, so they'll cast the Jews in even worse light. So either he didn't want to be the tool for spiritually causing harm to Klal Yisrael, or he didn't want to be a tool to cause that physical harm, enabling Ashur to survive long enough to be able to attack, grow, and ultimately attack Eretz Yisrael. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu is almost saying to Yonah, I'll give you the fear of conscience. You want to run away and not get Nebuah? You're not going to get Nebuah. But here's the irony. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives him a non-Nebuah message. As maybe you ran to the sea, you'll get a sea-based, a marine message. Not Nebuah. It's going to be everything marine is going to give you the message. It's going to be the storm and the sailors and the fish through. You don't want Nebuah? You can run away from Nebuah. There's, you have your Bechir Chavshis, but you're going to enable HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, not only despite what you do, but through, ironically, through what you do. And A. B, the second layer of that, is in trying to run away from giving Musar to Nachrim and thereby gaining to the Tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him, in trying to run away from that, you end up, without even trying to give Musar, causing a whole group of Nachri sailors to do tshuva in a remarkably dramatic way and with remarkable rapidity. So you can run, but you can't tell. It takes in a whole new layer of meaning. You have Bechir Chavshas, but understand that what you're doing is wrong. Understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu has a plan. Understand that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to be a part of that plan. Wants to be a part of that shining vision of Ritzon Hashem. You have Bechir Chavshas to choose what your behaviors will be. You don't necessarily get to choose what the outcomes will be. And as I mentioned other week, Rav Avinar points out that that's the story with Moshe and Paro. That's Dafka, through Paro's decision to try to kill Moshe and Yisrael, he ends up vaulting Moshe because of that into the Nile and then into his own palace, whereas Ibn Ezra says Moshe ends up getting the best training he possibly could have gotten to ultimately be Moshe and Yisrael. Double, at least double iron. And well, not only he points that, but also this Yosef and the brothers, right? It's through their chasing him out and intending to kill him, they end up, in order to stop the fulfillment of the dreams, they actually end up putting into place all the pieces that will ultimately bring about the fulfillment of the dreams. That's what we're seeing here as well. That's what we're seeing here as well, I think I mentioned last time also, Rav Avinar also points to Radak, who suggests that one of the big kashas in Perek Gimel is, we don't have time now to talk about Perek Gimel extensively, but one of the big kashas, why are they listening to him? He just shows up out of nowhere, no one knows who he is, and all of a sudden the whole town, even before the king, you see that there's movement in Perek Gimel. First the people respond, and then the king responds. Why the grassroots response? Radak says, Because they all knew that he had been thrown out of the boat. Everyone knew the story of what happened on the boat. They knew there was some miraculous nevuah, and miraculously he's killed. He's swallowed by a fish in the middle of Mediterranean. We're never going to hear this very important message. And then in he walks. So he has a captive audience. Dafka, because he ran away. One final important point, and I'll be glad to take some questions. So the tshuva of the sailors is remarkable in the sense that it was almost by accident. And it was from very low to very high. They were very far away. They maybe had some good kavanas. They had some religious sense, not about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They had some sense of Sarvi Onesh. That's already impressive. But they built from that to Mamish. Yir Gedolos Hashem, Karbonos, maybe Giyur. The true Am Shinin, we don't have time for now. The last Wednesday night, I had a chance to talk about what you see from the Tshuva Am Shinin. Either it was a dramatic turnaround, or perhaps according to the Rishalmi and the Rambam, it was actually the fact that they didn't do that much, but did something significant. Kadosh Baruch Hu already accepted that as a not complete, but significant, meaningful step of Tshuva. The Tshuva of Yonah. We talked about most of the Tshuva of Yonah. Right? So Yonah finally, Perek Aleph, he's running. He realizes, it seems like maybe Perek Beis, he has a chance to think in the fish. He realizes that the messages that Kadosh Baruch Hu was giving him. And he realizes it's time to go back. And ultimately goes back to Beis HaMikdash, gets Nevuah a second time, and this time he's ready to roll. And he does what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. Here's what's remarkable. He does what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants him. He goes to Nineveh, and exactly what he thought would happen happens. As he says in Parak Dal. I thought this would happen. I didn't want to come the first time because I had a feeling they're going to do tshuva and you're going to let them off the hook. And then it goes like this. Rabbi Kadosh Baruch Hu trying to teach Yonah a lesson. So he gives him this kikaya. Hey, Yonah's getting so high. It sounds like Yonah is dehydrated. And he's suffering, he's close to death. And then he gets his kikayon for shade. Sukkot time. Shade, misakech. And then, true. And then the kikayon is gone. Right? And he's incredibly upset. And he's also dying. And Akash Baruch says to Yonah, you care so much about the kikayon. You didn't work for it. It was easy come, easy go. I just, boom, it's appeared there on its own. You had no investment in it. I mean, it was helpful to you. You didn't work on it, and yet you cared. Don't you realize? Here's the Varacham Makom Al Masav moment. Don't you realize? I am invested. There's an enormous community there. Maise Yadai. Don't you get it? What's missing from the Shakavataria? Shaka Vitaria. What's missing from the Shaka Vitaria? Close. The Taria. Right? It ends that the Yonah ends with a question. Now Kosh Boko says, don't you get it? Well, how the Alpha Avdalis, right? O. Henry short story sometimes ends with a question. Right? You have the lady and the tiger. Scholars point out Dr. Seuss sometimes does that. I'll pee O. Henry to end with a question, the cat in the hat. So that's cute. But Lahabda Alfi Avdalis, Yonah? This isn't a joke. This is Kisvei HaKodesh. It ends with a question. 1 second. So, you end with a kasha? What type of Shaka Vitari is that? L'chora, what you see. Godel Koach HaTshuva. Let's bring it all together now. Right? Beis Yosef said, you see from Yonah, Godel Koach HaTshuva. We want to know before. There's so many passages in Tanakh. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of options for the Haftarah before Ne'ilah. Says Beis Yosef, nah, but here you see, apparently uniquely so, Godel Koach HaTshuva. Something about the magnitude of Tshuva. What is it that you see? So maybe as you suggested, across the board, Jew, non-Jew, any human being could do tshuva. Right? And these people are pretty far away. Ninveh, the sailors, it's not like they're already tzaddikim, we're going to tweak it a little bit. Right? According to, we didn't have a chance to talk it now, but if you want to listen to the shiur from Wednesday night, Yerushalmi seems to say that Ninveh, they didn't even do so much tshuva. Now, not only they were starting from very low, they didn't get that high. They made a little bit of a shift, which is remarkable. Alternatively, Go'el Koach HaTshuva is to understand Yonah. What Yonah learned is that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu says jump, you jump. You have to do. It doesn't mean you don't have kashas. He had kashas. And it's not even clear that he ever came to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to tell him. That perhaps, I would suggest, is part of why it ends. You don't hear Yonah's response. Yonah may never really have, didn't really get to Teretz. Kashmah was trying to explain to him. We're not sure that Yonah said, oh, okay, now I understand. Maybe not. But you know what Yonah learned? Yonah learned to be like Avraham Avinu. That Kadosh Baruch Hu says you need to do this. It's fine to have kashas. But kashas and understanding is very important. Most Rishonim assume that time of the Kra is an important chelik of Torah, to understand the reasons for mitzvahs. And that's a way to a window into the moral, ethical, religious principles that Kadosh Baruch Hu is conveying to us through the specific tzivuim that he has. But at the same time, that there's incredible value in understanding the why of tzivui Hashem, that cannot get in the way of performing that which Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. He got it right the second time. Because Perek Gimel comes before Perek Dalet. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I have to go to Ninveh. I don't understand why. I don't get it. And it's legitimate to have kashas. And he does ask his kashas. But he understands the humility of saying, intellectual humility of saying, just because I don't get it, that doesn't mean it doesn't make sense. It means I don't get it. I'm a finite human being. I don't get it. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants me to get it. That's Talmud Torah. I should seek to understand Ritzon Hashem as deeply as I can. But that can't get in the way of performance. It's not that I'll do when I get it. When I understand, then I'll do it. No. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you do it, you do it. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, this is what you need to do. By definition, that's moral. It's valuable for me to seek to understand why. But first comes Perek Gimel, and then comes Perek Dal. That's what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to do. I still don't. It's clear. He didn't get it the second time. He went to Ninveh anyways. Because he understood that that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. That's what I need to do. So he goes, and as he said, exactly what he was worried about happens. But he did it. Because that's what Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted. And then after he said, but I want to understand. I'm really upset. I don't get it. I now am going to be the vehicle for either spiritual kitrik on Klal Yisrael or physically. Now Ashur is going to thrive. Now they're going to grow. And they're ultimately going to attack Klal Yisrael. It's killing me. But he understood that even if his kavana was good, which might not be the case, but definitely... Now, the Kuzri describes Kavanas Chorotuv Masecha Ein Mitzuyin. Then you have a person who means well but isn't acting properly. That might have been the sailors. Even from the outset, they understood Schar Yonash. They didn't know about Kadosh Baruch Hu, so they're crying out to their Getchkas. And then they were educated, praying like Kadosh Baruch Hu. I'm not sure his Kavana, we even say the Kavana was Ritzuyin. I mean, part of it was. He cared about, obviously, Israel is a wonderful thing, but there needs to be Tzivu Hashem. And he ultimately turns around, and that's Go Lekal HaTshuva. It's not that all of a sudden everything made sense. Be understood. I have kashas. I'm a finite person. There'll be things I understand about Kadosh Baruch Hu, but I'm gonna commit to doing right now, in the long run, trying to figure out.